Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
Let's talk about the Great Divide here.
The Continental Divide?
Well, not that divide. There are many divides
we could talk about,
but...
Yeah, we could get into some slippery slopes.
Oh, I'm sure we could. However, the Great Divide about cell phone service inside of national park spaces.
Oh, yeah.
There is a great debate among people who go to national parks around should there be cell phone service or not.
Yeah, I feel like this is a sticky wicket when it comes to parks that aren't as centralized in areas where they're communities. Like,
sure.
You don't have that issue so much like in like a Shenandoah or like an Acadia because you're like essentially right in a community.
Yeah.
So it's like a little easier to have service there.
But if you're in a glacier.
If you're in a glacier.
Or if you're in...
Or in a Yosemite.
Yosemite or even
Yellowstone.
Zion.
Yeah.
I mean, and Zion
well,
has...
Zion has Springdale right there.
But I don't remember there being a lot of cell signal in there. That could be different now.
Yeah.
But the two arguments are this. One side of the argument says, well, for communication and safety purposes, it's a good idea to have cell phone service. And also people are used to cell phone service, so we might as well.
Yeah.
And then the other side...
The other side is, you know, why you're outside in nature, so why do you need to be connected anywhere else? Slash, like, you don't need to be, like, looking at memes or things like that or, you know, not being focused in the space that you're in, which is beautiful and wonderful and
like,
stupendous.
Look at what's around you rather than what's on a screen,
exactly.
A small screen in your pocket.
Exactly.
I definitely understand why people want safety and communication because if something were to happen to either of us while we're on a hike with no cell signal, that turns into maybe having to abandon a person to go get help and come back to them. You know what I mean? Like, that is scary.
It is scary.
That's a scary situation.
That is. I guess that's why satellite phones are a thing, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And things
but
like that,
I guess,
we could definitely
I guess depending
invest
on,
in.
You know, how often you're going to be in situations like that, to be out on the trails all the time, do you really need a satellite phone? So, like, the convenience of just having your regular phone.
Yeah,
it is
true.
It's the debate, I feel like, that can go round and round and round.
Oh, I know.
Without a definitive sort of answer.
Right. And I think it all just boils down to who's using it and how they're using it.
Right.
And, like, you know, if there is cell signal, like, I can't stop somebody from looking at memes while they're, you know, walking through Sayi Pass.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope they're not because there's just...
There's too much beauty.
There's too much beauty around you, but technically you can't stop somebody from doing that.
You can't.
No. So it's... I feel like it's similar to like cell phones in movie theaters.
Right.
I say movie theaters because live theaters, your cell phone should be away and you better not ever take it out. Don't you dare put that phone away. You have come to a live theater performance. There are people on stage who are real people who are working to bring you something that is both entertaining and educating, right? So
and you can clap for them at the end.
That's right.
But
and then you can
not in a movie. Don't clap for those people.
Oh, no.
They're not there.
Right. They're
or
not there.
When an airplane lands, stop.
Unless it's been a journey. You know what I mean?
So.
Unless it's been a journey. But I can't stand seeing cell phones in movie theaters. That's why I often choose to just sit close to the screen. People hate me for it, but I would rather sit closer than further back.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the movies sometimes with my friend Dita, and she wants to sit in the last row up top, and I'm like, have fun. I'm going to be down here in the front.
Right.
So, but because there's screens
because
out, and it's so distracting.
Because you want a neck in the back row. You obviously can't do that in the front row.
Precisely.
Look. looking for adventure. I want to follow on the trail or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky. Don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real. You can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national park.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national park.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
So let's recap.
Let's.
Because this is part two of a three-part series on a single hike.
Mm-hmm.
So part
Huge
one
music.
was hiking starting from Piegan Pass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today's episode is about hiking to Sexton Glacier.
Correct.
But let's recap. Who were we hiking with?
So we are hiking with Becky Lomax and her friend Cynthia. Becky is someone that we had known for quite some time. We were able to communicate with her at the start of the pandemic, and we essentially fostered a friendship and working relationship kind of back and forth through that time that took us to Glacier this past summer of 2021, which allowed us some time to spend with her and the fortunate opportunity to get to hike with her.
And to meet some of her wonderful friends.
Her wonderful, like, whole group of people that she's got out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of whom felt like instant family.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So today we were hiking Sayi Pass. In order to get to Sayi Pass, we started off of going to the Sun Road. This is a point-to-point hike. So we left a car at the end of the hike. We all got in one car, drove to the beginning of the hike, and parked a car at the beginning of the mm-hmm. hike. We started on Piegan Pass. Up to this point, we had hiked 5.6 miles.
Mm-hmm. We had to go, you know, along multiple trails as we had gotten, you know, up from Piegan Pass to this point, which was essentially the Sayi Overlook and the Sayi Pass. We were able to see incredible views of Piegan Mountain and also of Boulder Valley, and then down towards, as we were at the top here, where we had sort of left off in our last episode, looking down towards St. Mary Lake, which is where we were going to basically end our travels that day.
Right at St. Mary Lake.
Right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So we had just seen Boulder Valley, mm-hmm. which is the second view that comes with
the second
hiking,
giant view. Yeah.
The second giant view that one gets from hiking Sayi Pass.
Because
mm-hmm. we had hiked up, go listen to the episode 79 so you can hear all about what it was like to get to this point. We turned around, there's a giant sweeping view behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And we took lots of photos and really took in that view before we kept going, because eventually that view would
disappear behind
kind of
us. A cliff, essentially.
We make it up to the top and suddenly see Boulder Valley.
Right.
Long, sweeping, endless looking valley into the distance.
Yes.
And it is a spectacular view.
Mm-hmm.
Then we continue. We continue on the trail. The trail is clearly marked up here at the top here. We have to go over essentially what they call a saddle.
Yeah.
Which is this part that dips in a mountain's ridge line where people often pass over.
Yep.
Like a saddle
it's
that
like
goes on a, on a horse.
Yeah.
Right. So we continue. We make our way around and curve to the right. And then boom, finally we get this third view.
Right. This is the view that sort of leads us down to St. Mary Lake. So we're able to see, like, in the distance, there are some, you know, cliffs and mountains beyond the lake, but then also the immediate cliffs and mountains that were, like, in the space from where we were to the lake. So it's, again, an all-encompassing sort of sweeping view that you get, which this is a hike where I don't think I've ever seen so many different spectacular sort of, I'm going to call them terminal views in a way, because they felt like that in some ways. Obviously, it wasn't the end of the hike, but it was like this payoff view, we'll say.
Yeah.
There were three of them.
In a matter of 15 minutes.
Right.
This was a view that we began to see after we'd made this turn toward the right.
Right.
So we take a moment to take it in, and then it was time to lunch.
Oh, yeah. Because I think we were all at this point, like, ready to rumble. Or at least our stomachs were rumbling currently.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had just come up all those switchbacks. backs on that like kind of rock pile is what I called it in the last episode. So we were all just like ready to find a spot to eat. So we sort of do in a way where you're able to still see both views of Boulder Valley and also of down towards St. Mary Lake. And we all kind of like sat apart from each other. I think there was a lot of space.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
So the trail is very clear at this spot.
Right, because we're viewing it from above too.
But it's next to this sort of like flat rock area. And we stepped up to that flat rock area, which is to the right of the trail. Mm-hmm. And we sort of spread out to eat.
Yeah.
This was where we talked all about cell phone service in the park.
Yeah. And just sort of like what the, you know,
the arguments
were. And also just like recounting our time with our terrible cell phone service carrier. Not a sponsor. Probably never will be.
No. Oh, no.
No.
Not interested in that.
Hey, me and me. No, bye.
No.
But this is also the point where we're able to see in the distance and where we have this conversation about, well, what are we actually going to do next? And like, where might we go? Cynthia, I think, brought up, she's like, oh, you know, see that over there? That's Sexton Glacier.
And we could see it a little bit from where we were sitting because the view had started to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And we could look to the right and see that there were some snow fields on the peaks.
Yeah.
But she pointed out one and said, yeah, that's Sexton Glacier.
Yeah. And she was like, yeah, Becky's taken me out there before. Just like sort of casually dropped this. She was just like, yeah, it's real cool. Like, it's not that bad. We went out maybe a little later in the season than this, but I've been out there with Becky before. So she just sort of like puts this down on the table and like kind of walks away, and we just continue to like munch and like sort of like enjoy our time. Later on, we together recapped this hike with our friends Brian and Tino, who had been to Glacier. And this was a hike where they were with like 10 people. And I think it was at this point that a grizzly bear crossed their path.
That's right. It was up there where we were eating lunch.
So, and that was an experience that they told us about, but we didn't know exactly where it was because they had gone to Glacier maybe 2 or 3 years prior to us going.
Yeah.
But after recounting that, that was, I was like, oh, well, this is like, there's nowhere to like even go up there. It's just bald and open. So I can't imagine coming across a grizzly up there.
No. And oh my even God, with, you would, I mean, where would you go? What would you do?
Yeah. Even with being back with
Stand
Becky,
your ground, use your spray if you have to. Right. That's what you'd do.
Even but, with being with Becky before, and like when we were in Lake McDonald, she was like looking up at the peaks and she was like, oh yeah, I'm just looking at the shadows to see if it's a bear actually moving.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh well, yeah, they're up that high, you know.
Oh,
for
they
sure
are. And goats are up that high too.
Sure. So
it depends on how the shadow looks and you know,
if it's,
because there were a couple of times where like when we were at Logan Pass and they were looking and they spotted some sheep.
Shadows. After we finish up with lunch, we wrap up, you know, fairly quickly, and then we head on back onto the trail. As we're going down the trail, we can see that this amazing view is getting closer and closer, and it looks like there's a ledge about 200 feet in front of us, but it's not a ledge, but it definitely looks like that.
There's this photo that we have of all of us walking, and it looks like we're going to walk right off of a ledge.
Yeah.
But it's not a ledge.
Yeah.
No, this view, when we get up to this point of where the ledge would have been if it were a ledge, now it's like the view, we're inside of the view.
Right.
And now the sweeping views are to our right and left, really far out. Essentially, the descent section of this hike begins.
Right. It's, you know, you, as you're coming down on the straightaway, you are sloping down. Like, you're pitching down pretty quickly. Like, you do lose as you're going forward. You sort of just start to drop off. Like,
yeah.
And then we can see that there are switchbacks that we're going to have to traverse as we go further down. And as we start looking down the trail, it's like, oh, there's a really big snowfield where we're actually going to have to go. Like, in order to continue the trail, to get down to Sunrift Gorge, to get back down to the car, like there's a pretty decently sized snowfield that we're going to go have to get to.
And then as we're walking down, Becky pauses to point out Sexton Glacier again.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have a much better view of it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're looking at it now. We're taking photos and we're, you know, talking about Sexton Glacier. And then she gets an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, oh, we probably could go out there. It was more like, yeah, we could probably go out there. You know what? Let's go out there.
Yeah, it was very like it off was the very, cuff.
Oh,
yeah.
It was. We were like, oh, really? And Cynthia was like, well, if there was anybody we were going to go with, we're going with the right person.
Right, exactly.
So she's like, we've been before.
Yeah.
I think I was a little bit afraid to go off trail. And I was like, oh, I don't. And Cynthia was like, no, trust me, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
And that was a nice reassurance.
Right.
Because Becky has been guiding in Glacier for
a long time.
A long time.
And also, just as a disclaimer, you know, this episode should come with a disclaimer in that we did go with someone who knew what they were doing. We did go with, we had the privilege of being able to experience this with that person. Really, don't do anything that you're uncomfortable with or don't know what the situation may have in front of you, because that's a surefire way to get yourself in trouble or hurt.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Just to, you know, I just think it's important to say, like, this was, it is something that's doable for sure. But I think we were at a weird time in the season where not all the snow had melted out. There were some things that we're going to talk about in a second. There were some things that you needed to be more cognizant of because of the time of the year. If it was later in the summer, I think it would probably have been easier to get out there without any difficulties or as much to be concerned about.
But we were with a literal expert.
Right.
So that was why we knew that this would be fine.
Yeah.
Becky then goes into scheming mode, going like, okay, well, how do we get, where should we go? I think we need to go there. Mm-hmm. I think we need to get there. Okay, so what's going through your mind in this moment when it's like, okay, we're going off trail, we're headed to a glacier?
I mean, you know, that part of my brain that just turns off, which is the fear part, like in these moments. And I'm like, great, I'm sign me up. Like, I was here yesterday waiting in line.
Uh-huh.
Give me the ticket. Let's go. So I was excited. And I also felt like, yeah, we were going to be okay because we were with Becky and she knows her stuff. Like, she spent the whole trek up being like, this is this type of wildflower. Don't do this. This is that. Like,
yes.
I was just like, this is the person to be here with. So there wasn't concern. For me, it was like, well, this looks like it's going to be fun, because it was not a straight shot. Like, looking at the point we were at where we left the trail, we were still on the trail. The snowfield we were going to have to cross to continue downward down the switchbacks to get us back to the car was one way. And that seemed very clear cut. And from this vantage, you could see sort of where the trail was going to the left. But there's nothing that's clear about what we have to do to the right, which is where we needed to head to get to Sexton.
Right.
Which seemed fun, especially because it looked like, oh, we're going to have to scramble a little bit. Oh, we're going to have to go over some snow. Oh, this will be interesting. We haven't really had to do this. So
let's describe sort of what the terrain looks like in this moment, which will sort of explain what I was thinking in this moment. So we'd come down these switchbacks a little bit. What that, we were standing in a spot where we were sort of like on the same elevation level as Sexton Glacier.
Sort of.
From the trail, Sexton Glacier was sort of like over to our right, up against the peaks, which are sort of like curved around coming toward us.
Yeah.
And there's this hillside sort of like that you could traverse across to get over to Sexton Glacier. In the summer, I'm sure it's just like green fields that you could walk right over there too. But it wasn't exactly the summer.
No.
So, and there were things that, yeah, we were going to have to cross some snowfields. And so I think the part of me that was just all about, oh, you know, stay on the trail, that's what they tell you to do. It's like, okay, yes, it is certainly the thing to do. But this is also something that Becky has done many times guiding. So this wasn't a situation where it was like, yes, we're with an expert and this expert is unfamiliar with what we're about to do.
Right.
It was this expert is incredibly familiar with what we're about to do. Right. So I felt a whole lot
and
better
also
about
going
that.
To be certain that what we were doing was treating the landscape properly.
Oh, of course.
As we did what we were doing.
Certainly.
So there was definitely like, I remember walking out and being like, please just try to stay on rocks. Don't step on any plants. Like that was definitely something that was said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Stay on rocks.
Yeah.
Don't step on any plants.
Yeah.
We finally leave the trail. And for a while, it feels like walking across the hillside, right? It's mostly gravelly, but there's some grass about. There's some flowers about. And there are alpine flowers. So we talked a lot about alpine flowers in episode 79. But alpine flowers are really small. They're really, so there can be, like, you can see a very familiar looking flower, but it might just be the alpine version of that flower.
Yeah.
You're still seeing mountainous here on this hillside. And there are patches of snow about.
Mm-hmm. It sort of feels like we're kind of crossing in this hillside, like almost like a moraine, like, or a fell field, which is sort of like what that remnants of moraine is, because there were a lot of rocks and stones too, before we ended up getting to this first sort of patch of snow that we were going to have to traverse across. But Cynthia's leading for a little while, and this is where Becky gives her a compliment that's like, great trail finding. And it great was like, you could finding. See like the light like shine down.
Cynthia's like, I live for those compliments. When Becky tells you like it was good trail finding, you did good.
We descend this one hillside and it leads us to first very big snowfield. And this is where we can tell that we have to really figure out how to do this in a very safe manner, because if we don't, it could really mean that someone gets hurt pretty badly.
And with that, let's take our first break. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Okay, so we're playing adjective, noun, verb. I've got one.
Okay.
Okay, so weak and flexible blooms elegantly bouncing around.
Weak and flexible blooms elegantly bouncing around.
Yeah.
Flouncy flowers.
Oh, flounce is one of the words, and flowers is one of the words. That's right.
In that order
but,
or no?
No, no, but oh. Not in that order. No.
Oh. Weak and flexible.
Flounce is the verb. Weak and flexible.
Fatigued flowers flouncing.
I'll take it. I was thinking flimsy flowers flouncing.
Okay. Flimsy flowers flouncing.
Weak and flexible.
Weak and flexible. Flouncing. Flouncing's a great word.
Isn't flouncing a great word?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Circus jesters who caw like these blackbirds, creating a knitwork pattern.
Is crow one of the words? Is clown one of the words? Is it clownish crows crocheting?
It's crowing clowns crocheting.
I so think a good. Clownish crow is,
a clownish crow.
Is great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Okay, so I have another one. So tired and... I'm trying to think of a way to describe this without giving it away. Tired and imaginative followers of the Grateful Dead behind the wheel of an automobile.
Dreamy deadheads driving?
I'll take it. I was thinking of delirious deadheads. Oh,
delirious. Delirious. Oh, okay. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Tired and imaginative.
Tired imaginative. Yeah. I love it. Okay. Strange and quirky felines preparing food.
There's so many double O's here. What is kooky cats cooking?
That's right.
Kooky cats cooking.
Okay, so here we are at the first snowfield. The first snowfield, it wasn't that why, this first one.
No, but it was very long.
But it was...
like, it was steep.
It was steep.
Yeah.
And I didn't have crampons. You didn't have crampons.
Right. For those of you at home that don't know what crampons are, they are... they're like ice spikes, essentially. You can put them on your shoes. They're like snow chains for your feet.
Yeah. They're like snow chains for your feet.
Yeah.
You should only wear them on snow.
Right.
They're just like snowshoes. You shouldn't wear crampons when you're on grass or when
or
you're...
rock.
Or definitely on rock. Because the rock can hurt the crampons.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So this snowfield requires us to sort of go down diagonally to get to like the closest spot where we could like continue.
On land.
On land.
Yeah.
That's not covered in snow. Mm-hmm. So Becky instructs us to dig our heels in first.
Mm-hmm.
Dig your heels into the snow and make your way down.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have my poles, and the poles were really helpful here, but also the poles were really helpful. This was going fine for a while, and then I definitely...
you ate it a little bit.
I ate it a little bit. A few times.
Yeah.
A few times I definitely just fell over and it was what it was.
Right.
Meanwhile, Cynthia was behind me.
I was just gliding across the snow.
You were... I think you left first. I think you were first in front of everybody.
Oh, I guess so.
I think you were.
I think Becky was just like, do this and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, she was sort of like, yeah. We had to make sure, too, where the snow met the ground. One of the most important things that we were told
was... you mean the
was
edge of the snowfield.
The edge of the snowfield, meeting the, like, bare rock or the grass. One of the most important things we were told, and especially if there were rocks that were sticking up through the snow, don't go near them. Or if you're jumping out onto the snowfield or coming off of the snowfield back onto land, make sure you're not stepping on the snow right next to the land. And the reason for that is because that area there may be undercut or hollow because of the melt, and you could actually fall through. That didn't give me terror at all.
It would have made a tiny little miniature ice shelf, if we remember our types of glaciers.
Right.
Right. Your foot on it could... it's not that it... like, you're not going to hurt snow. That's not what it's about. It's about hurting yourself.
Falling through and hurting yourself.
Right. Yeah. You could, like, step on something that has no support underneath it.
Yeah. No fun. So, yeah. So, it was a lot of just digging our heels in. Like he said, the snowfield wasn't that wide, but it was definitely something we had to strategize to, like, what's the quickest distance from the point we're at to the next point?
So, we make it to the other side, and Cynthia is leading now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember after the snowfield, this section was a little rockier and less grassier.
Yeah.
It was wet. Mm-hmm. And so Cynthia was doing a great job of making sure that we were stepping in like the driest parts.
Right. Because it was sort of muddy too.
It was muddy. Yeah. And yeah, this was where Becky complimented her again on her trail findings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we continue the majority of this entire way over to Sexton Glacier was what's right in front of us. Mm-hmm. What's the safest way to navigate it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were doing at every turn.
Yeah. I mean, especially when we were involving snow in the journey, because that was the sort of potential to hurt yourself more was on the snow. So that was very much so a consideration anytime we approached a snowfield.
And speaking of snow, we came upon a second snowfield.
Right.
So this one is even bigger than the one we had just crossed.
Yeah.
This one is actually quite massive.
Mm-hmm.
And
very steep.
Very steep. And it seems to just go right down to just an actual
cliff
edge drop off.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And what does Becky say?
Becky's like, we really can't cross the snowfield up this high because it's so steep. And if anybody was to fall, they would gain momentum and they would just slide and roll and you would not be able to stop yourself, essentially. And so that didn't thrill anybody.
No.
No.
No. And so there was no way across it right here.
No.
So we were going to have to go to a different part of the snowfield.
Right. Right. So that actually, believe it or not, involved us climbing further up. Because what happened further up is that it actually leveled off a little bit. There was a section that was a little bit more, you know,
flat
and parallel to the earth as opposed to like at a sheer angle to it.
Right.
So that seemed like it would be the best section that we could safely cross at. That involved a lot of uphill grunt work to get there.
Oh,
yeah.
There was, we thought we were done with uphill.
No.
But we weren't.
Lies.
Lies.
Always lies.
We weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to this second part. We get up to the part where things have leveled off.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have to cross the snowfield. And it feels a whole lot easier to do this here.
We're still doing like a little bit of a downward angle. Like we're not sort of crossing, zipping straight across from point A to point B. It's flat, but it's actually like flat on sort of a little bit of a downward. So we have to kind of traverse on an angle in the flat section, which seems maybe hard to wrap your head around, but like this was still us traversing. We had to kind of cut back down again to then go back up. So it's a lot of like sort of like stair stepping. I feel like it was like up one, over one. It was like the rise and run formula coming back to haunt me.
There you go. Yeah. In this moment.
What is it? It's not a squared plus b squared. That's the Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah.
What is it? Ax plus...
Rise over run?
Yeah.
That's when you're graphing things.
Yeah.
That's what I know.
Okay. Great. Great.
To make it across the snowfield, Becky hands me her crampons and is like, use these. And so Cynthia has on crampons. She offered them to you, but you said, actually, I'm doing all right with taking my heels in.
Yeah.
So you get going. I've got the crampons on now, and that helps tremendously. And so we take it very slow, and we're all able to make it across the second snowfield.
Did you just feel like you had better grip? Because I didn't use them at all. I haven't used them yet.
Yeah. I felt a whole lot. I felt like I could actually like stand on the snow in a way that I couldn't before. I was digging my heels in, but I felt like I had traction.
I understand.
Yeah. My boots at the time, I was very excited about these boots that I had, and but they ended up not being great.
No.
They ended up not being great at all.
By the end of the trip, they...
Oh, they were in the garbage.
Were in the trash, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, they had like...
They lived a life, a full life.
They had lived a full life on that, on this 5-week trip.
Yeah.
And seen many miles, and it was time for them to go.
Yeah.
And they did.
Mm-hmm.
So we finally make it across the snowfield, and we're back on dry land again for a little bit. And then we soon come upon a ridgeline.
Yes.
Now, this ridgeline is about, I don't know, like 6 to 8 feet in the air above us.
Yeah.
But it's like we now have to heave ourselves up onto this ridgeline. There was no like elegant way. There was like a little bit of a cutout.
Sort of, yeah, that like kind of had some eroded fake stairs in it that we could make kind of like stair steps up. As we get up to this ridgeline, we can really see Sexton Glacier is much closer at this point. And it's from afar, when we first saw it, it did just look like snow, just kind of in a bowl right against the cliff edge. But here you get to start to see the striations in it. You get to see the actual like color change of where it's icier versus where it's actual snow on top of it. And we can definitely see that there are these hills of moraine, which are further away.
And moraine is this sort of debris field, or the piles of debris left over from when a glacier moves. And so, yes, there are moraine fields right next to Sexton Glacier. But we can finally see from where we are the side of Sexton Glacier that's like full of color, that's got the blue in it, that's got the, you know, the ice that has compacted over years and years and years. We can see all of that right there.
Yeah. We do have to, as we get closer to the moraine, cross one final snowfield.
A third snowfield.
Which is not as long.
Not nearly as long.
This is also fairly flat up here.
Crampons we're kind of, back on.
Kind of hit our sort of level again.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we cross the third snowfield, and we make our way up to like the first
moraine pile.
Pile of moraine.
Pile.
Pile of moraines.
Yeah.
We make it up to the first moraine pile. I was exhausted in this moment, so I take a break. Becky also takes a break. And this is when we split off for a second. You and Cynthia are like, we're going to go walk all the way to the third moraine.
Yeah.
And
just
Becky,
basically about as close as we were going to be able to get that day.
And Becky was like, I'm good and I'm staying here. And I was like, you have got my number right now and I'm going to do that too.
Yeah. And so, Becky has been before, so it was sort of like, I've been out there, it's fine. Like,
right.
But Cynthia hadn't been for a while. And I was like, well, I'm here, I'm doing this. So
yeah.
Yeah. This was really cool to go out those two other piles of moraine. The moraine piles are really steep. So actually getting up that first one was grunt work to get up there.
Huge amount
just
of grunt work.
Even to get up. So we continued to traverse and we had to like dip down a pretty considerable amount before getting onto the second hump of moraine. And then the third hump, there wasn't as big of a divot in. It's less of a drop there. But here, I mean, you're so close to the glacier. It was so cool to be able to like have this view from where we were at, especially because we really didn't get to see Grinnell in the Grinnell vantage that most people are used to seeing it from, which is on the hike from Many Glacier. We did see Grinnell from above, which was an incredible view. I won't, you know, besmirch that view for anything except for the fact that that 0.8 miles to get you up there is awful.
Sheer terror. It's genuine terror.
But this was a view where you really do see the glacier in its entirety, and you get to see some like detail, and just it feels more tangible here than it felt like when we were seeing Grinnell. All that to say, dusty stopping point. I still think you had a great view too.
Was a great view.
Right.
Becky and I had a lovely time sitting over here. I mean, we were probably only sitting there together for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
While y'all went out to the third pile. But it was a lovely conversation. We talked about life. We talked about goals. We talked about teaching. And while we were sitting there, Becky let me take a picture of her. Mm-hmm. And we'll share that on Instagram. Mm-hmm. But it was a beautiful moment because we'd finally made it to Sexton Glacier.
Right. There was an option as Cynthia and I were out there to go like to one further pile of moraine. But I remember like having to get down that third pile was pretty steep to then have to climb up to the fourth pile. And we're like, this is a good, we're good here. Cynthia took a bunch of photos of me with St. Mary Lake in the background in that view. And it just was so magical out here. This experience sort of gave me what Devil's Garden gave me in Arches, where it's sort of like, oh, you get to like climb over stuff. And like, it's not just using your feet. It's like using your brain and your hands. Whereas like sometimes hiking can just be very mindless. This was like more problem solving. And this is where I think I come alive. And that's why I think I also like those hikes like Angel's Landing, where it's like, oh, well, there's a chain, but here comes somebody else, and now I have to get over here. It's like, how do I maneuver and make this work? So I think identifying it now after talking about it for so many years and doing these hikes, I think those are the things that sort of turn off the fear part of my brain, because it's like, oh, my brain is working now. Whereas I feel like you're just like drenched in fear, and you're like, my working brain isn't here. It's my lizard brain. All that's present is lizard brain right now.
It's interesting. I think it's more of if a resting point is involved right near an ending point. Mm-hmm. And I say near an ending point, I say that because it's like close. Like I don't feel like I'm missing out by not going to the third pile of moraine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I'd rather just hang out right here.
You're living that
like,
no-fomo
life. I need a break. That's where I am. So.
And with that, let's take another break.
Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage
Jen Uintera.
Mm-hmm. Jen Uintera. Okay, so I feel like
she's a fright queen.
She is a fright queen, but she is a fright queen who is a surprise. As in, like, she comes out and she looks like a glamazon, and then she has like a change into something honestly terrifying.
Well, then like there's a projection screen and it's like the movie that like is in the movie The Ring that you watch, and then like,
oh right, exactly,
she's just Samara.
Right, she could do a lot of references.
She could, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she...
She's also the exorcist, the idol that comes down.
Oh, Lord.
Like, there's a lot of pageantry and, like, yes, fly-ins that are happening in her show.
A lot of film references from you on this queen.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm curious about... I feel like she could also do, like, you know, like a werewolf moment.
Sure.
And also, like, a, you know, like a spider arachnophobia moment.
She's a Halloween queen.
She is, because she's a fright queen. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, she
goes to Six Flags Fright Fest all the time. Not an official sponsor, but...
I think she's a little more elevated than Fright Fest at Six Flags.
She's a haunted mansion queen.
I feel like she is. It's scary, but it's also funny. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
of course.
It's funny in how abrupt it is. It goes from, like, everything is great and everything is beautiful and, like, polished to everything is terrifying. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I could see her doing a number of, like, you know, she's doing Call Me Maybe, and in the middle of it, it just transitions into Nine Inch Nails or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Scary. Scary stuff.
Call Me Maybe. No. Maybe I won't.
Right. Maybe I won't.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So I could see her doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think her merch is a gen in the box.
Oh, okay.
So you wind it up, mm-hmm, and then when it pops out, it's just some terrifying version
of Jen.
Some terrifying version of
mm-hmm
Jen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jen Ewan Tara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Name for her middle name is for Ewan McGregor because her parents really loved Ewan.
This actually, I'm riffing here for a minute.
Okay.
I'm curious, maybe Jen Ewan Tara isn't just one queen. Maybe it's a triple act, and there's Jen and there's Ewan and there's Tara.
Oh.
There's two drag queens and one drag king, and this is their gimmick.
Oh, okay.
That it's like polished and then terrifying.
I got it. And maybe they're also a band too.
Maybe they're a band too.
And they play their covers.
Yeah.
And one of them, whether it's Jen, Ewan, or Tara, lip sync.
But I
so it opens it up a lot.
Or they're all live singers or something like that.
Sure.
Right. But I feel like it would be really funny if, like, you know, they're singing, like, Be My Baby, mm-hmm, and it's a very sort of upbeat version of it, and then it just, like...
goes into guar.
Well, they sort of, like, slip off a glove, and it's like, well, the arm is covered in blood, and they slip off the other glove, and there's, like, guts falling out of the arm. And
you're
then,
really
like,
digging in.
Oh, I'm digging in. And then they, like, take off, like, maybe they, like, rip open something, and it's, like, blood is falling out of their chest, and bats fly out of it.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of production value.
There's a lot of production value. Jen, you, and Tara.
Mm.
Yeah. And they, they're a band.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Okay.
I'm into it.
I'll let you have it.
Great.
So, Thaddeus and Gentlethems, please welcome to the stage, Jen, Ewan, and Tara.
You and Cynthia return from the third marine pile. Mm-hmm. Join Becky and I over at our casual chattings, which was like, God, I loved that moment. Mm. The two of us just got to sit there and talk.
Yeah.
In this beautiful place.
Yeah.
And like, it was great. And so we said, okay, we're going to have to figure out our way back.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And this was also like, do we actually remember what we did? Because it was definitely like, there isn't anything that's super marked over here.
No. And so, also there's, you know, we learned from Tamichi Root in Black Canyon of the Gunnison, mm-hmm, that it's really hard to remember how you came, even if it's like an open situation.
Except did remember, or I remembered, and we were thrown off.
We did. We were going exactly the correct way.
We were going where we should have gone. And so the only benefit here is that you can see the trail in the way distance as you get closer to it. You know you have to head in one direction, and then it's like, oh, there is the
and
trail.
And by one direction, we mean a general direction.
Right.
There's the general direction that we needed to head in order to get back to where the trail was.
Right, right. So we start on our way back, and we have to, you know, there's a lot of stopping when we hit a snowfield, because it involves, you know, you guys had to sit to put those crampons on. You weren't standing to
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, find a boulder I can sit on that's adjacent to the snowfield, and then...
Put them on. Get across. Get them off. Every time.
Yeah. Wash, rinse, and repeat, essentially.
I mean, it was.
Mm-hmm. We do climb back down the ridge that we had to climb back up. And when we got down there...
Were there other people?
Nope. There was nobody else.
There was nobody else this whole time?
No. And really, we only saw people briefly after we were done with Sexton Glacier. But that was closer to the bottom. We'll talk about them in our next episode. But we do cross... We come down the ridge and then we don't cross that snowfield... automatically that we
no,
had to
because
we
there was this like other ridge that we like sort of
followed
took and followed around because what we were trying to do because we had like come down a little bit further like from where we were on the trail and we were thinking maybe we can pick up the trail at like a switchback that's a little further down that's past the snowfield that we would
that
have
was
had
blocking
to cross
it. So we realized that as much as we were trying to make this happen, fetch wasn't going to happen this year. So we had to basically backtrack, essentially.
Yeah, we got, I mean, it wasn't that we got lost, but we tried something and it didn't work.
No, and that's okay.
And that is okay, because you go back the way you came, you re-strategize.
Oh, remember, this is also where I found, like, an ice pick.
You found, yes, this was, okay, so we were...
This was like we had to turn around.
We turned around and you found like an ice axe.
Yeah.
Like someone's ice pick axe.
Yeah.
A pickaxe.
Yeah.
We got there. We got there. You found a pickaxe in the...
Just in the field, basically.
In the field. And we picked it up.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, someone lost this.
It was really rusty because it probably had been there all season.
Who knows how long.
And Cynthia's like, okay, I'll put this in my bag. And I remember Becky being like, but that's your like brand new bag. You're going to get rust all over. And she's like, it's okay.
It's okay.
I think we wrapped it in something. But yeah, that was like added weight to...
To Cynthia's bag.
To Cynthia's bag. It was like strength
not
training.
That was not a light... tool.
No, not at all.
That was a tool that, you know, I mean, it's not the heaviest tool, but it certainly has weight to it.
It sure does, yeah. So we do have to go back to the second snowfield and cross over that, which we didn't cross exactly where we did because we didn't see our footprints from before. I think we were a little higher up than we were prior to.
That's right.
Yeah.
We, for the first time, crossed it at a higher point, and now we were coming at it a little lower than that.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
And so coming at it a little lower, no, we didn't see our footprints.
No, because we were able to judge it from this angle and from coming from it from this side to say, oh, this was actually a safe enough place to cross.
Yeah.
And then we sort of try at this point to see if we can make it onto the trail a little further down from where we had gotten on. So like Dusty was saying, so we could avoid the snowfield that we're going to have to cross, just that snowfield in the switchbacks that we were going to have to do eventually anyway. And that would save us a little bit of incline to then have to do decline, essentially.
On the way down.
On the way down. So
because
that's...
we were going to be now headed down a descent right after this.
Oh yeah, and a decent descent. Something that I always confuse when I try to spell.
A decent...
Descent. A decent descent. Yeah.
Well, a descent has that S, right?
Yeah.
Descent is decent.
It is decent. it's true. Mm-hmm. We do eventually get to the point where we are able to cross that snowfield, the third snowfield that was the first we originally did, and cut our way down to avoid the snowfield in the switchback and meet up with the trail a little further along, which is exactly what we wanted.
And it was about, I don't know, about 15 switchbacks down.
I don't know. It was something crazy, but that's...
15 switchbacks down from where we had started. All right, let's put this trek out to Sexton Glacier on the Karen Stone scale.
Great. For me, this was a blast, so I'm going to say it was a 5.
Oh, yeah. I was actually going to say a 4.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't too hard. It was just... It took a lot of strategy.
Oh, yes.
It was like brain activated.
And
physically.
This is where I was alive.
Alive. Physically, not that taxing.
No. I would say, again, big disclaimer, don't do this unless you are with someone that knows what they're doing or where the
and
snow has
done it many times.
Or
before.
The snow has melted out enough that you're not crossing snowfields where you might get yourself in trouble. Like,
that's right.
This is not something to fool around with by any means. That's my big disclaimer here.
So a 9 out of 20 Karen Stones.
Mm-hmm. And now let's end this episode like we end all of our full length episodes with some Jeopardy style trivia.
All right. I'm going to start us off today.
Beautiful.
Are you ready?
I am.
So this category is called Snow Fields. in quotation marks, mixed in.
Okay.
So this sort of acts like a before and after category.
Okay.
However, things aren't before and after.
Okay.
They're mixed in.
Okay.
This category is going to ask you to name a phrase that contains the word field.
Okay.
But mixed into the phrase is a person whose last name is Field.
I never could.
So, for 100, the phrase borrowed from team sports, meaning to make sure that everything is equal for everyone so that no one has an advantage, mixed with the actress known for saying things like, you like me, you really like me, the whole time, and I can walk to Texas and back, but my daughter can't, she never could.
Now I'm confused. So Sally Field is one of them.
It's one of them.
Right.
Right. But what's the phrase?
So is it leading into Sally Field or no? Is it?
So start with the phrase.
Okay.
Start with the phrase.
So the team sport phrase, uh-huh, that means that it's equal playing for everybody, uh-huh, in the game, right?
Yeah.
So I'm really okay,
so the phrase we were looking for was a level playing field.
Oh, a level playing
field. So the answer would be
Sally
a level
field.
Playing Sally Field.
Got it.
Correct.
I understand.
So it's a level playing field with Sally Field mixed in.
Got it.
Right.
Okay.
It's like a circle inside of a circle.
I understand.
Cool.
I got
okay,
it.
Okay, great. So for 200.
I never could.
This phrase, borrowed from an outdoor elementary school event, means to take something and run wild with it. With this famous cookie company mixed in.
What is Have a Mrs. Fields Day?
That's right. Exactly right. Uh-huh. Okay, you get it now.
I do.
Is it
I
making
get it.
You,
I really it get it.
Making you access a part of your brain that hurts.
No, it's just I think I like, I the first phrase threw me off. And so I got you now.
For 300, mm-hmm, this phrase, also borrowed from team sports, is often used to describe not only getting a project started, but getting the productivity happening, perhaps delegating it to someone or a group of people to get things happening. Mixed with this phrase that we always hear Fran Fine say at least a few times on every episode of The Nanny.
What is take the Mr. Sheffield?
Close. What is get the ball down the old Mr. Sheffield? Great. Okay.
Get the ball down the field. Okay.
For 400.
The field phrases are not my strong suit, apparently.
Apparently. Kryptonite for you. This phrase, also borrowed from team sports, is a way to describe doing all of the work out on the turf and not taking any of it with you when you walk off. With this New York botanical area of Central Park made famous by John Lennon mixed in.
What is leave it on the strawberry fields?
That is correct.
Okay.
Leave it all on the strawberry fields.
Okay.
Great. And 500. This phrase, borrowed from baseball, references a certain peripheral position that often gets little action. A phrase that is used to describe a surprise. With this song made famous by Sting mixed in.
What is my sex life? Fields of gold. I saw an opening and then took it. What is out of left fields of gold?
That is correct. What has come out of left fields of gold?
Great.
Correct. All right. And that was Snow Fields mixed in.
Beautiful. Well, we've come to it, my friend.
What?
This category... Categorically.
This categorically. I'm a little sassy categorically.
This category is called Girl, Put Your Crampons On.
I'm ready.
And in this category, I am going to be giving you a snippet, the same snippet of the song by Corinne Bailey Rae.
Okay.
And you need to tell me what equipment I'm asking you to put on for camping or hiking.
I'm so ready. I'm right. So ready. Okay.
I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to sing them or if I'm just going to say them.
Up to you.
Girl, put your blank on. Tell me your favorite song. You go ahead, turn your light on. Starlight and flashlight beams. I hope you get your dreams. Just go ahead, turn your light on.
What is the headlamp?
That's correct. I hope I was on pitch there.
You were. Okay, that was great.
All right. So you see how it's going to go.
I do.
And I also tried to keep, I hope you get your dreams is a line that I kept in.
I love it.
So making the rhymes to make it fit was real fun.
Real right? fun.
For right. 200. Girl, put your blank on. Tell me your favorite song. You go ahead, pack your stuff up. Water, food, pain relief cream. I hope you get your dreams. Just go ahead, pack your stuff up.
What is your backpack?
That's
or
correct.
Your day pack?
That's correct.
Great. I love this All right. so much.
For 300.
Also, Mike is singing, everybody. It's great. I love it.
Girl, put your blank on. Tell me your favorite song. You go ahead, fill them boots out. Warm toes and tight sewn seams. I hope you get your dreams. You go ahead, fill them boots out.
What is hiking socks?
That's correct.
Oh my god, I love all the rhymes with dreams. It's so good.
I really had the best time writing this.
Oh my god, it's so good. Oh my god, oh my god. We have two more. I'm so grateful. Okay. Yes.
All right. Compose yourself. 400.
Girl, put your blank on. Tell me your favorite song. You go ahead, keep your step count. Count calories, don't lose steam. I hope you get your dreams. Just go ahead, keep your step count.
Okay, so what is like a Fitbit?
Correct.
Or like an Apple Watch?
Correct.
Or some kind of something you'd wear to keep your... To keep your step count.
That's right. Correct.
Okay, great.
For 500.
Girl, put your blank on. Tell me your favorite song. Yeah, go ahead, repel winged things. No creepy crawly screams. I hope you get your dreams. Just go ahead, repel winged things.
What is bug spray?
That's correct. It's a 5 for 5 sweep.
No creepy crawly screams. I hope you get your dreams. This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. We're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
And that Corinne Bailey Ray is always out there.
She is.
She is.
She is. Go get your dreams.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written by Dave Seaman and performed by Dave Seaman, Mariella Klinger, and Sean Sklios. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.